The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the host of this show, Eric Metaxas, is a demanding taskmaster.
For example, he insists on my announcing this show at all hours of the day and night. In other words, whenever you listen to it, I must announce it. That's the rule. So please,
please, try and listen to this show at a reasonable time.
My wife and kids never get a good night's sleep, and it's destroying our family. No pressure.
I hate to interrupt my texting to do this program. Because Todd really gets on my nerves. But the good news is I'm sitting here with you. I got to tell you, Kenneth Barnes, you were here like a year ago. Our conversation was so fascinating. All I could sputter at the time, because one of us didn't have time, I said, whenever you're back in New York, I want to continue this conversation. You are the author of the book Redeeming Capitalism. This is just so close to my heart. You say it's about reclaiming the moral roots of capitalism for a virtuous future. This is just huge for me. Thank you for coming back.
Well, it's my pleasure. First of all, any excuse to be on your show is a good one. I was able to be in New York this weekend. I'm keynoting the Believers in Business conference tonight. So that's why it all worked out. So it's a pleasure to be back.
As I keep saying, this is a subject. Maybe, you know, people say there's nobody I don't remember the exact term, but, you know, there's nobody as passionate as the converted. Once I was converted to this idea and understood it, you know, you want to tell the world, because capitalism is not a moral system unless the people within the system are moral. Same thing with democracy. And so when people talk about the free market like it's this magic thing, the free market can be used by an oppressive communist power I guess my point is that we have to talk about what capitalism is before we talk about why we don't like it or why socialism is good or bad or whatever. And you've done that, and you've, you know, made a career of doing that. You're at Gordon Conwell. What do we need to know about you besides the fact that you teach at Gordon Conwell and have written the book Redeeming Capitalism?
Well, I'm not a career academic. I came to the academy relatively late. I was a corporate guy. I did business at a very high level all over the world. So I've seen the good and the bad and the ugly of capitalism. So I write and I teach from the perspective of kind of a poacher turned gamekeeper.
And that's good.
And I'm also ordained. So I write as both a political economist, a business person, and as a theologian. It's an unusual combination.
Yeah.
And at Gordon Conwell, in addition to being a professor there, I also run something called the Mockler Center for Faith and Ethics in the Workplace, where we look at this really on a very practical level, helping churches and pastors and people. How do you figure out how we apply this to our everyday lives?
Well, again, I you know, when I really understood this,
these you know, light bulbs go off over your head, you just think, holy cow, I've not really gotten this before, which means probably that a lot of people don't get this. You know, when we talk about in my book, If You Can Keep It, I talk about liberty, self-government, and why that isn't possible unless the people are themselves virtuous. If the people are virtuous, usually, which means if faith is somehow involved, then self-government can work and can bless an infinite number of people. And I realize it's the same with capitalism. If the people within the system are basically virtuous people, capitalism can be a force for good. But if people are not virtuous, it can be everything that the left and the socialists and the communists say it is. And so, since you're an expert on this subject, help us understand, first of all, the subject of your book, Redeeming Capitalism.
Sure. Well, first of all, you'll notice the title is Redeeming Capitalism, not Replacing Capitalism.
Right.
Capitalism works. And I talk quite a lot in the book about the fact that largely due to free market economies, we've seen an improvement in the quality of people's lives, the likes of which previous generations could have only imagined. So we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But the narrative that I speak against is the notion that the bad and the ugly, the excesses and some of the fraudulent behavior we've seen in recent years, is not the price we have to pay for the good. We can have capitalism that works not just for some, but for everyone. And I really start the book by explaining that capitalism is a subject, not an object. What I mean by that is it has no agency behind it, no single mind or will running it. It has no what we theologians call hypostasis of its own, which also means it has no moral compass of its own. So it's going to reflect the morality or the lack thereof of the cultures which employ it to create wealth. So our problem really is that we have a culture now that is very different than the culture of those who originally conceived what we now call capitalism.
Okay, and this is the key, and as I say, the parallel to self-government is dramatic. The people are the system. So if the people are virtuous, capitalism is a force for good. If the people are virtuous, self-government is a force for good. Liberty is real and reaches out beyond its borders. If the people are not virtuous, then capitalism is everything that the left says it is. It's a force of oppression and so on and so forth. But you know, and I know, I've discovered that there's nothing like liberty and self-government. There's nothing like capitalism. The things that we would replace it with are infinitely worse than capitalism or self-government. And so we need to do the work to redeem these things, because the solutions of, you know, socialism of whatever kind, big government bureaucracy, whether in the economic sphere or in the government sphere or in the culture, these are all bad solutions. So this is the only right solution. So how do we do it?
Well, you know, it's a great question. First of all, let me, if I may, just back up a tiny bit, because, you know, in the third chapter of the book, relatively early in the book, I talk about Adam Smith. You know, Adam Smith is seen, you know, as the sort of, you know, the godfather of capitalism. Fact of the matter is, Adam Smith was not an economist. He was a moral philosopher. And you can't understand Wealth of Nations if you don't first understand Moral Sentiments, the book that he wrote some 20 years before.
Now, did he when did he write the
Wealth of Nations?
The Wealth of Nations.
1776, ironically.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So it's an amazing thing. So we have a moral philosopher at the same time that we have political philosophers coming up with what we call the U.S. Constitution and this form of self-government. We have this great man, Adam Smith, coming up with the economic peace.
That's right. And of course, both of those phenomena were really born out of the Scottish Enlightenment. Adam Smith himself was Scottish, and he was looking at the question of why some countries are richer than others. How does that work? Why is that the case? And everything that he talks about, including even the invisible hand, is predicated on the notion that first and foremost, human beings need to be moral people. And if you think about it, every economic decision that's ever been made was a moral choice. The decision whether or not to buy this jacket or a jacket from Armani was a moral choice as well as an economic decision. And that plays out across capitalism.
Right.
Because capitalism is nothing more than the accumulative effect of individual moral economic decisions or immoral economic decisions. And we saw that with the global financial crisis, which is why I start the book with that crisis. It's just a snapshot of what can happen when people make conscious decisions which are grossly immoral, even if they're not illegal.
Okay, that's the key. And this is why what you and I ultimately are calling for is revival in America. I mean, we can't – no one can force revival. No one can force someone to believe in the God of the Bible. But that is our hope and our prayer, because we understand that things are quite far gone and you need a host of things. I mean, I would – you know, spiritually I say revival. But at the same time, we need a re-education in what is capitalism. I mean, that's why I want to talk to you, because if we don't get this, it's going to be replaced by something truly horrible. And the same thing with self-government. If we don't really understand what America is, the alternatives are terrible. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that socialism will pull us to be Venezuela. It might take longer, but we've got all kinds of mixtures of this. Greece has been on the ropes now for a couple of decades. We have to understand these things. So this is really, really important for the world. I hope I'm not overstating it. We're going to be right back talking to Kenneth Barnes. The book is Redeeming Capitalism. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Ooh, I smell. Can't you smell that smell? Ooh, I smell. The smell of around you.
I remember feeling so desperate and so trapped. I was surrounded by family and friends that loved me. Any one of them would have listened to me, but I was so afraid of opening up to them, too embarrassed to talk about what was causing me so much pain. It felt like torture to be so close to people that would have loved to help me and yet too embarrassed to ask for help. And then a few weeks ago, I heard about Faithful Counseling here on the radio. Christian counselors, fellow believers, trusted therapists who not only share my faith, but could actually help me. They want to give you a free week so you can try them out. You can begin a conversation by text or phone, even video conferencing, in the privacy of your own home. Why not give it a try? If it's not for you, cancel during your first week and you won't pay a dime. Go to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. It's time to talk to someone who can help. Go now to tryfaithfulcounseling.com. It's so easy to get started, and your first week is free. Go to tryfaithfulcounseling.com.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help. Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite. Pick up 2 bottles of LicoChops, get the 3rd bottle free. New improved LicoChops with omega-6, omega-3, vitamin E, and now 6 extra direct-fed microbials. Even better for the digestive tract and immune system. And dogs love it. Try LicoChops. Buy 2, get 1 free. This is Henry Lukasevic for Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
Unplanned, based on a life-changing true story.
My name is Abby Johnson. I used to be the director of this clinic.
The Daily Wire says Planned Parenthood is not going to like it.
America wants abortion, which is why we exist.
Glenn Beck says you have never seen anything like this.
You've managed to make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Unplanned. Now playing. Visit unplanned.com for tickets. Rated R.
Rated R due to graphic scenes not suitable for children.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/America. That's ZipRecruiter.com/America. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/America.
Facebook and Google, you think they value your privacy? It's actually the opposite. Big tech companies make a lot of money from your personal information. Gmail by Google, along with Yahoo, AOL, and the other free email providers, they have a history of scanning mailboxes and delivering targeted ads within those accounts. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Somebody has to pay, and Google and the others are paying with your personal private information. Ronald Reagan would not stand for this. He would not use those services. He believed your freedom and your privacy were individual rights that came from God and were protected by your Constitution and its Bill of Rights. Take back your God-given right to privacy right now. Get a Reagan email address at ReaganPrivacy.com. Unlike other email providers, they do not scan. They do not record your emails. They leave you alone. A Reagan email address costs as little as $33 a year. That's only 9 cents a day. Plus, get 2 free bonus months when you sign up now. Get your Reagan email address today at ReaganPrivacy.com. That's ReaganPrivacy.com.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. That sticks. I'm Eric. And I'm talking to Kenneth Barnes. Kenneth, welcome.
Good to be here.
Your book is Redeeming Capitalism. You are the Reverend Dr. Kenneth J. Barnes. You hold the Mockler Phillips Chair in Workplace Theology and Business Ethics at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. We're talking about your book, Redeeming Capitalism. The title is great because it says everything. But let's talk about how do we do this? I said earlier that I think the way to do this is that we have to wake up people to what it is, what capitalism is, and to help them understand that this is it. In other words, there's not like a plan B. There is only plan A. Plan A is capitalism. If we screw this up as we've been screwing it up, there's nothing to replace it that's good. We're going to go down the drain like Greece or Venezuela or whatever. It's inevitable. It's like a math problem. There's no other solution. So what say you?
Well, there are other solutions, but as you say, not good ones. And that's the problem. So in the book, I have a whole chapter on Karl Marx. And I think I'm very fair to Marx because, you know, he lived through and identified a lot of the excesses of the Victorian version of capitalism, which was pretty ugly in many ways.
So that's fair, right? In other words, when capitalism goes wrong, what the socialists and the communists say is right.
To a degree, absolutely. So the problem was his proposed solutions were very bad, and I explain why. I also have another chapter, by the way, on other utopian solutions. The problem with utopia is, as Marx himself believed, at some point you have to enforce it. And by definition, an enforced utopia is a dystopia. And that's what people don't understand. But even if you had a milder form of socialism, a kind of democratic socialism, which is certainly, you know, an option, you have a situation where the economy itself, however, is deprived of the fuel that drives the engine.
Okay, that's the key, right? In other words, it's not that it breaks down entirely, but it's kind of like somebody says, okay, look, we've had these people driving 90 miles an hour. People have been killed. They have killed other people. We need to get everybody to drive at the right speed. Mm-hmm. And then somebody says, well, you know what? People just don't listen. So what we're going to do is now we have the technology so that everybody's going to drive 30 miles an hour. And we really can't do it any other way. It's got to be 30 miles an hour. And you say, okay, we gain something, which is to say less deaths, less tragedy on the high end because of these nuts that are driving like wild people. But on the low end, our economy, if trucks can only go 30 miles an hour and we're going to pay another price that's going to be huge. And what you just said, with a socialist democracy, theoretically it can work. It doesn't need to be a totalitarian dictatorship. But at the same time, we will never achieve what's possible under a redeemed capitalism. What does that mean when you spell out for us, what is it that a redeemed capitalism fuels that we ought to understand we're losing if we don't have capitalism?
Sure. Well, the difference between the two philosophies is a misunderstanding of wealth on the side of those who propose closed utopian systems as opposed to those who profess belief in free market open systems. And that's because the political left and the economic left, if you will, view wealth as though it were matter it can neither be created nor destroyed. There's a certain amount of it, and so distribution of the wealth is what matters.
Okay, so they have a zero-sum game
Absolutely.
Belief, and capitalism believes that wealth can be created.
That's right, or destroyed.
Okay.
We have to remember that.
Okay, now, as a I'm not only not an economist and didn't take any economics classes in college, but I've never understood really what does it mean when somebody say wealth can be created. I mean, for my audience, some of whom will be as ignorant as I am on this, what does that mean to create wealth? How do we create wealth? How does a huge stock market, we've created money, how does that work?
That's a super question. So again, understanding that Karl Marx's definition of wealth was the accumulated value of the use value of all commodities, which is the same as if it were matter. There's a certain amount of commodities. The world has been created. They ain't making any more. So the use value of all that there is in terms of resources, that's wealth. And the only thing that changes the use value is the application of labor. So that's why he believed that distribution of that is the key to success. In fact, that's a lousy definition of wealth. Wealth is really this. It's the delta between the amount of labor, resources, and technology required for subsistence and everything else. So if you have a system that encourages the use of assets that already exist for the promotion of new technologies, new applications of labor, and new use of resources, you will increase that delta. That's how you create wealth. And then you monetize it. And, you know, I've had people send me things. They said, well, you know, isn't capitalism in the Bible? No, capitalism isn't in the Bible. Markets are in the Bible. But really, you couldn't have capitalism as we understand it until you had fractional banking in the end of the 17th century. Because
now,
that's
now
what monetized
me.
It.
What do you mean fractional banking? And you said the end of the 17th century we got fractional
that's
banking?
That's right. At the end of the 17th century.
For the dummies like me, what do you mean by fractional banking?
So the banking system that we use, which drives all monetary policy, only requires the issuing banks to have a fraction of that which is in circulation. So it presumes the creation of wealth and puts liquidity into the market and allows that liquidity to do exactly what it's supposed to do, which is create wealth.
Is this again, I have to translate for myself to see if I'm getting this right. In other words, if we take all the money out of circulation and put it in a vault, that crushes its ability to create more of itself.
Exactly.
Okay,
right.
Now that is biblical because the parable of the talents, you know, when if you believe that your master is harsh, you bury the talents because you're scared of losing them. Mm-hmm. But if you love your master and want to bless your master, you say, hey, let's gamble a little bit. Let's see if we can make more money to bless our master. And so you take it out of the ground and you try. Is that a fair parallel?
That's a biblical principle, but it's not capitalism is what I'm saying, because it really wasn't until we had the ability to put that money into the system across a wide spectrum. And also until we had the Industrial Revolution. It's not an accident that capitalism occurred at the same time as the Industrial Revolution, because it put technology on a path that was able to increase that delta at a way that was impossible before. That's why if you look at growth stocks and the future of Wall Street and where the money goes, it always goes into new technologies, because new technology is the best wealth-creating engine there is.
Well, again, to bring it down to my simple level, what you're really saying, I think, is that today, for example, we have dishwashers. So we have washing machines. So women do not need to spend hours and hours with a washboard, scrubbing clothes, drying it through the rollers. All of that stuff that was necessary, technology has created ways for us to have leisure time. And I would argue that maybe leisure time is a kind of wealth, or is it a cognate to wealth?
Well, I wouldn't use the term leisure time, but we have the ability to use time and resources more efficiently and according to our pleasure. And
okay.
So that is,
well, when I say leisure, look, you can use your leisure time feeding the poor. You can use your leisure time, helping your kids with their homework. But the point is that it's a delta because it's not necessary. It's an excess. It's
That's
something
right.
that you can use for good. So it's like what you mean when you say wealth.
That's right. And the real biblical paradigm for this is right in the earliest description of the creation narrative with the social mandate to be fruitful and multiply. That is the ultimate biblical mandate for what we call capitalism. That doesn't mean capitalism existed in Bible times. It didn't. But the principles are very, very much embedded in our understanding of what it means to be created in the image of a creator God.
Okay, so the status quo and a situation of stasis is not God's plan for man.
Absolutely not.
Okay,
absolutely
so be fruitful
not.
And multiply. You're saying it goes beyond population.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, even in the earliest creation narratives, we have reference to things like gold and precious jewels, which only had two possible values, adornment and for the purpose of exchange. And that's exactly how it was reused. So the notion that we should be satisfied with the wealth that exists and merely try to distribute it equally or fairly goes against the very understanding that wealth can disappear as well. So we can create an environment that either destroys wealth or creates wealth. It's not about distributing wealth.
So it's important to say before we go to this break that what you're saying, the trouble with socialism or communism is not that it's distributing wealth only. You're saying that not only that, but it can destroy wealth so that the poor can become poorer rather than simply less rich or to have the rich less rich. That's scary. So I want to talk about that when we come back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking to the author of Redeeming Capitalism, Kenneth Barnes.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. President Trump says he will close the nation's southern border, or large sections of it at least, next week if Mexico does not immediately stop illegal immigration. The president says the problem is so serious it is putting too big of a burden on the immigration system. Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal is all but dead after lawmakers voted once again today to reject it. That's the third time that's happened. Meanwhile, some of May's critics say it's time for her to leave her role as prime minister. U.S. consumer spending edged up 0.1% in January. Incomes advanced by 0.2% the following month. The U.S. faces various headwinds right now, including weakness overseas and the waning effects of the 2017 tax cuts. On Wall Street right now, the Dow is up by 157 points, the NASDAQ up by 51. The S&P 500 so far has clawed out about a 14-point gain. More details at srnnews.com.
If your family depends on your income and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to SelectQuote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
It's probably been about 10 years ago. I had quite a few credit cards. The interest on the cards was really high. I was making the minimum payments, but barely. And it was just getting to be too much, so I called Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6977. To talk to a certified counselor.
They met with me and they were able to get all of my credit cards in one lower payment.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy to manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
They did help me learn how to manage my money. Now, you know, we have a house and we're doing a lot better.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6990.
My name is Holly, and I am debt-free for keeps.
1-800-990-6976.
Hey there, folks. folks. It's the Eric and Taxes Show. I am really excited, and when I get excited, I talk too much. So, Kenneth Barnes, you got to help me here. You're saying stuff. I get lit up. You're helping me understand that distributing wealth can result, in fact, in decreasing overall wealth. I know that instinctively, but when we talk about socialism, when you hear people on the news talking about socialism, they rarely talk about this idea, the fundamental idea that you're saying wealth is not static. It's not a zero-sum game. It can be increased or decreased. And once you know that, you understand that we've got to figure out how to redeem capitalism to make it increase. Otherwise, it will decrease as it does in places like Venezuela. Correct?
Absolutely correct. So if you create an environment where, for instance, you make it so that people will become risk averse, or you make it penalizing for creating wealth through owner's taxation, or you have regulations that are onerous and it makes it impossible for people to do what they need to do to use the resources around them effectively. Now, that doesn't mean, I want to make this clear, doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a progressive tax system. I happen to believe in that. But it does mean that that tax system needs to be clear. It needs to be fair. It needs to be simple. One of the problems we have with the current system is not that, you know, the high end is too high or the low end is too low. It's that it's too complex. And so it does further the concentration of wealth in the hands of those who are able to manipulate the system. That's one of the things that the political left looks at and says, well, this is a problem, so let's slam the rich and tax them more. But one of the things we've seen, and I write about this in the book in response to Thomas Piketty's a book recently on capitalism, is that if you tax people too onerously, you just end up with either capital flight or preservation of assets that don't go into the economy to create new wealth. Once that starts to happen, entropy sets in and you get recession.
Okay, but wouldn't you argue that that's already happening in places like California?
Well, I don't look at California in isolation, but you could argue that there are some pockets in the United States where state governments have made that mistake. Again, because...
Well, people are flocking to Florida and to Texas and to Oklahoma. Why? Because the taxes are lower. I mean, this is a reality. This is happening. People are moving to these places and away from places like New York and California.
Yeah. But again, there's a balance. So let's look at Europe for a second. You know, I lived in Europe at a time when they were, you know, struggling. The UK was struggling. Where do we set the top rate of tax? And there was a movement toward the Piketty style, 50, 60, 70%. And what they found was, and what France found was when they did the 70% top rate, is that it just threw a wet blanket on the economy.
I mean, is this not part of the Laffer curve? Isn't that what explains it, or isn't it?
To a degree. There are elements to the Laffer curve I wouldn't agree with. But generally speaking, yes, there is an element of truth to that. But more importantly, if you keep it in the 40s, let's say, as the top rate, that's not enough of an incentive for someone to leave their culture, to leave their home, to leave what they like about Southern California or what they like about New York. So you can set rates that do help make the system fairer without discouraging proper risk, proper investment, and the creation of wealth.
I guess my question is, how is it moral not to have a flat tax? In other words, how would you argue for a graded gradations?
Yeah, well, because nothing about wealth creation happens in a vacuum, and especially because of that fractional system I told you about. The way we put liquidity into the system puts it through a certain funnel, and that funnel is controlled by a relatively small number of people. And so there are systemic elements to our economic system and our social system which do make it harder for everyone to have a level playing field. If you had a level playing field, you could argue for a flat tax. That would be perfectly moral. But because we don't have a level playing field.
Can you give me an example of how it's not a level playing field? Because I do want to understand this. I've never heard this argument before.
Well, if you just think about people who are in the banking sector, you know, the banking sector creates a lot of money. It's not always proportionate to the amount of actual wealth that's being created. Just look at our monetary system and look at what has happened since, say, Bretton Woods. at the time of Bretton Woods in 1944, when the world went to the gold standard and the U.S. dollar essentially replaced gold as the reserve currency for the world, the United States was the world's largest creditor nation. And we had three quarters of all the world's monetary gold. Today, we're the world's largest debtor nation. And all the gold in Fort Knox would only pay the interest on our national debt for about 6 months. An awful lot of people have been making an awful lot of money on debt, which usually means at the expense of others. So there are systemic issues there that need to be addressed. So without the ability to address that with a magic wand, which you can't, a temporary solution, if you will, is to ensure that those with more excess contribute more back into the system, and ultimately all the boats rise with the tide. And Adam Smith, by the way, believed this. Adam Smith didn't believe in inheritances. He thought the money should go back into the pool. He said each generation makes the money. That doesn't mean it should automatically be passed down so that the same family has the money forever. He also believed in what we call a living wage. And as you well know from your book on
Wilberforce
and anti-slavery, Wilberforce often quoted Smith to show that slavery was actually a negative impact economically, even though it seemed like it was a smart thing.
Sure.
It was actually the opposite.
Okay, so this is not there's some people that are kind of like free market ideologues. And you're saying some things that they would have trouble with. When we come back, I want to dig deeper into that. We're talking to the author of Redeeming Capitalism, Kenneth Barnes. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. You love me to want you the way that I want to. Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
Albin, are you skeptical when somebody says something can help
you? Sometimes, yeah, sure.
Well, me too. Relief Factor.
Yes.
As you know, we advertise Relief Factor on this program. I was initially skeptical. I thought, they want me to advertise something. I don't know. Does it work? So I started to take it, right?
Okay.
And my acne cleared up. No, that's not true. But the fact is that I have had pain because I run, okay? And even though I was skeptical, I tried it. And you have to try it for 2 to 3 weeks in case – sometimes it works right away. But there are four different chemicals, whatever they are, active ingredients. And sometimes they take longer. But for me, it worked, and it's why I take it. If you have any aches and pains, folks, I challenge you to try it. It's $19.95. It's very little. And I think I can go out on a limb and say it probably will work. If you have any kind of aches, but it doesn't have to be like searing, horrible pain. But if you have some kind of, you know, arthritic stuff, I would try it. You go to relieffactor.com, $19.95 for the quick start pack, relieffactor.com.
What if every Christian discovered that their favorite hero of the faith held to some false and even shocking views? In his new book, Regrace, best-selling author Frank Viola uncovers some of the shocking beliefs held by faith giants like Luther, Augustine, and C.S. Lewis. He challenges us all to engage with fellow believers more graciously, even when we disagree. Regrace is available now, wherever books are sold.
Ask yourself, if you built a van for your business, where would you start? At the beginning, of course. With the people who invented the work van over 100 years ago, Mercedes-Benz. You'd give your new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter advanced technology and safety to keep you connected and protected. You'd make it available in diesel and gas, and there would be thousands of configurations and upfits to choose from. You'd build it right here in the USA, because your one-of-a-kind business deserves nothing less than a van that's built for you. Introducing the all-new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, the safest, most innovative Sprinter yet, starting at just $33,790. Built for you, the all-new Sprinter, built in the USA. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
MSRP excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Options, model availability, and actual dealer price may vary. See dealer for details about costs and terms. Equipment described as optional. 2019 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter available soon.
On April 5th, don't miss The Best of Enemies, starring Academy Award nominee Taraji P. Henson.
I play Ann Atwater, a civil rights activist who was able to approach hate with love.
And Academy Award winner Sam Rockwell.
All the better if you don't get my way.
Well, I'm gonna get in your way.
If you change one heart, you can change the world.
I have a Bible.
And then you ought to know, same God made you, made me.
The Best of Enemies, based on the untold true story. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters April 5th.
Hey there, folks. It's Eric Metaxas. If you know MyPillow. You already know how effective it is. On this program, we joke half seriously that it is the official pillow of Rip Van Winkle. Mike Lindell dedicated himself to inventing a pillow that works, that's effective. It's not a joke. I mean, he, if you know his story, we've interviewed him on the program. It's an amazing story, right? Okay, well, if you're looking for a great night's sleep, right now is the perfect time to get your first MyPillow. By the way, if you already know how great it is, you can get them for everybody you know. But I say that because right now on this program, to my listeners, there is a special offer, a four-pack offer that includes two premium MyPillows with two go-anywhere pillows plus free shipping. You have to call 800-978-3057 and use the promo code Eric or Metaxas, or go to MyPillow.com, use the promo code Eric or Metaxas, or call 800-978-3057. Do it now. We're talking about a book and a subject called Redeeming Capitalism. Kenneth Barnes, I don't know where to go next. There's so much. You were just saying that there are aspects to what people we might consider economic liberals that Adam Smith would agree with, ironically. I've never heard this. The idea of a living wage, maybe that some minimum wages are onerous, but some minimum wages might be okay. In other words, that it's not simply, quote unquote, what the market will bear.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. So Adam Smith was really quite prescient when he saw the potential that ultimately happened in the Victorian era with capitalism, where human labor would be treated as just another commodity. Remember, he was a moral philosopher, and he recognized that behind all human labor was a human being. So we can't treat it like we would inanimate assets. The second and most important thing, however, in terms of wealth creation, is that he believed the least a person should make is slightly more than necessary for subsistence, so that they would have adequate skin in the game, so that they would feel like full participants in the economy, and everybody would do better by it. Okay. And that was the argument against slavery, and it was the right argument.
And let's face it, that's the argument for a minimum wage. In other words, it's one thing to say the minimum wage should be $15. You don't have to go there. But the very idea that in America we have laws that say you cannot pay somebody less than this per hour is itself exceeding to these ideas of Adam Smith's.
That's exactly right. And, you know, before we went to the break, you said, you know, Ken, you're starting to say some things that maybe someone on the left would agree with. And the answer to that is right, because –
You mean correct.
Correct. That's right. I think you need to be a little bit pragmatic about these things.
Right.
What I tell my students is economics is a little bit like the game whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
You know, you hit something over here and then something pops up over here and maybe you didn't expect it. Even John Maynard Keynes was far more pragmatic than people give him credit for. When you read his correspondence to the prime minister of the day and not just read his textbooks, you realize that he recognized the fact that, you know, economics is a game that's played on a field that's constantly moving. So we need to be a little bit less fundamentalist in our economic beliefs.
That's why, you know, I say I'm a Christian more, or at least before I'm a conservative, because I think that sometimes we get hung up on ideas and we forget that truth is a person, and that the fundamental building blocks of the universe are people. It's not numbers. It's not, you know, and so when you realize, I mean, Tucker Carlson has talked about this a little bit on his show. And come out from under the, you know, the shadow of this very strict free market capitalism. I generally agree, but if it is not, if people of virtue are not involved, and if we don't understand that there are human beings behind the labor and so on and so forth, which is what you're saying, and I know you say in your book, Redeeming Capitalism, then in a way it does become what the hard left says capitalism is. And we need to be serious about that.
That's right. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And we're starting to see it. You know, there was just a report came out of Harvard recently that showed only 19% of millennials self-identify as capitalists.
Yeah.
And a similar survey was done, I forget who it was on the internet, but 55% of millennials said they would prefer socialism to capitalism.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a real uphill battle to educate people to why that's not a good idea.
Well, capitalism has become, the rich guy on the monopoly board, whatever. Mm. It's like that's the caricature. It's like we're back in the 1920s or 30s or whatever. And you and I understand that's not right.
Well, we're old enough to understand that as well. Yeah. No offense. But, we have a little gray in our hair. And, we remember, and I certainly remember the 1970s when I first came into the job market. We had a very different economy than we did for most of my years in the corporate world.
Yeah.
And what happened is we have a whole generation now who their economic consciousness started with the global financial crisis. That's their basic frame of reference and everything that came out of that.
Yeah.
So they just have a different prism through which they're looking at these things. And we need to help educate people as to why we want to redeem capitalism and not replace it.
Well, again, this is the conversation that we need to be having in our culture today, because we see what happens to democracy when it moves away from the real idea of the founders' view of liberty. It ceases to be democracy. It becomes a dystopia. You begin moving in that direction, and the same thing with the free market. But we're living in a culture that doesn't like to talk about virtue. Let's face it, since the 60s, this has been the narrative that when you talk about virtue, you lose people. It sort of sounds moralistic. It sounds church lady-ish. Virtue is what all of the founders and, Adam Smith, of course, they said without virtue, we cannot have these great things. These great things, which can help innumerable people, cannot be achieved without virtue. What a wild idea. We don't teach it in the schools, and you never really hear it on, even conservative TV.
Well, that's right. And I coined the term in the book. What we currently have is postmodern capitalism, very different from the modern capitalism that was observed by Max Weber or the traditional capitalism of Adam Smith. We have a form of capitalism which is really devoid of a moral compass and resistant, if not impervious, to ethical constraint. That's what's given it a bad name. We need to bring that ethical constraint back into economics and business.
Right. And how do you do it without regulations and laws?
Well, laws and regulations are what we defer to when ethics fail.
Correct.
So we need to do it through ethics. And here's the good news, by the way. Even though I come at it from a Christian perspective,
yeah,
these are actually universal things. This is part of God's common grace. Faith, hope, love, prudence, courage, justice, temperance, those things are universal.
Yeah.
We just need to wake people up to them.
Well, and I'm thrilled that Peggy Noonan wrote about this not long ago in her column, and David Brooks, 3 or so weeks before Peggy Noonan, wrote a column, and I've just been too busy. I was finishing my own book, but I thought, to read David Brooks say a lot of what you're saying here, I thought, my goodness, if we do not teach this and help people understand that we cannot function unless we introduce these ideas of virtue. It's not an option to leave it to the side. It won't work. Anyway, when we come back, we've got another segment with Kenneth Barnes. The book is Redeeming Capitalism. Stick around.
Now the only block of sun, they rain and snow on everyone. So many things I could have done. The clouds got in my way.
Unplanned, based on a life-changing true story.
My name is Abby Johnson. I used to be the director of this clinic.
The Daily Wire says Planned Parenthood is not going to like it.
America wants abortion, which is why we exist.
Glenn Beck says you have never seen anything like this.
You've managed to make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Unplanned. Now playing. Visit unplanned.com for tickets. Rated R.
Rated R due to graphic scenes. Not suitable for children.
What if every Christian discovered that their favorite hero of the faith held to some false and even shocking views? In his new book, Regrace, best-selling author Frank Viola uncovers some of the shocking beliefs held by faith giants like Luther, Augustine, and C.S. Lewis.
He challenges us all to engage with fellow believers more graciously, even when we disagree. ReGrace is available now, wherever books are sold.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Attorney General William Barr says he will send a redacted version of the Mueller report to Congress by mid-April at the latest.
Barr says he's working with a special counsel to redact material prohibited by law, material that could compromise intelligence sources and methods, items that could affect ongoing matters, and that could infringe on the privacy of third parties. In a letter to the heads of the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, he says he shares the desire to ensure that Congress and the public have the opportunity to read the report. He says he is well along in the process, and he expects to be able to release the report by mid-April, if not sooner.
That is correspondent Wally Hines reporting on Wall Street right now. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up by 187 points. NASDAQ up 55. The S&P 500's had a strong day. It's up by about 16 points. This is SRN News.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 3366 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 3366. Enjoy.
Talking to Kenneth Barnes, the book is Redeeming Capitalism. And Ken, you gave me a mug. Now, I can give you a mug. People don't normally give me mugs. So you've got the Metaxas, Eric Metaxas Show mug. I have a 313 Club mug. What is the 313 Club?
Well, this is the beginning of the answer to the question, how do we do it? How do we redeem capitalism?
Yeah.
So for people of faith, if there are 365 days in the year, and we're at church every Sunday, that's 52 less, that still gives us 313 days to figure out how we're going to help build the kingdom in our everyday lives, at work, at school, in our communities, in our families, wherever it might be. So if we're going to do this properly, if we really are going to try to redeem capitalism, I think it starts with redeeming work and reclaiming what it means to have work as worship. You know, work is not a necessary evil. Work, again, is directly related to what it means to be created in the image of God, who was the worker par excellence, right? So that's part of it. That's the first thing. The other thing is we do have to take a good hard look at this subject called money. We have a situation where both the government and the personal debt in this country is completely out of control and, I believe, unsustainable. Certainly not a biblical practice at all to be in this kind of debt. Mm. And at some point, we have to pay the piper. So that's an issue that has to be addressed as well. And we have to redeem markets. You know, the stuff that happens in Wall Street today really doesn't resemble the original concept of a bourse, which was to allow everyday people to participate in the economy through ownership of shares. And you participated and you sank or swim based on how that company did. So you used good fundamentals for investment purposes, and that really helped drive the economy in a positive way. What's happening now on Wall Street is, especially with the logarithmic program trading, is we've taken all the fundamentals out of investing. And now Wall Street is just churning money more than helping create wealth. The whole idea of the investment banking sector is as an intermediary sector between dormant wealth and that which is yet to be created. And if all Wall Street's doing is lining its own pockets by churning shares at the tune of about $3 trillion a day, then I think that's an issue we have to take a good hard look at.
Okay, who's taking a look at it and what can we do? I mean, we're going to get regulation if we don't take a look at it on our own.
Yeah, that's right. And there are a lot of opportunities for ethical investing. In fact, that particular sector within the investment business is the fastest growing sector, where pension funds, for instance, people who are usually in a pension fund have some sort of shared ethos. That's why they're in the pension fund. Well, they can direct the people who manage those funds to invest in companies and invest in ways that are looking at the long term, not just the short term.
Right.
It's the short termism that's causing so many of the problems we experience in the economy.
Right. It's an overfocus, almost an idolization of the bottom line and the now. And the now.
Yeah.
And that is sinful. I'd like to keep going, but we're out of time. Kenneth Barnes, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And thank you for playing Keith Green music. Boy,
yeah,
I haven't heard that
in a while.
We've
got the greatest bumper music, man. Okay, folks, the book is Redeeming Capitalism. Is there a particular website people can go to?
If they go to the Gordon Conwell, which is just gordonconwell.edu, they can look up the Mockler Center. It's
Mockler.
There.
That's right. Mockler Center.
That's right.
At the Gordon Conwell website. All right, terrific. Folks, go there. Get Redeeming Capitalism. Important, important, important. Thanks for listening.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.